So I want us to begin our study this morning in talking about the local church and our responsibility. We'll say more about the lessons we have planned at the next periods. We'll talk about what we have planned for the rest of the week. We'll talk about the local church for a little bit. In Romans 16 and verse 16, the Bible talks about the churches of Christ salute you, which suggests by the term churches, plural, that there are various local congregations. There are a number that are found throughout the New Testament. We won't take the time to look at each one of these verses, but you'll recall one of the most notable local churches that we find in the book of Acts is the church at Antioch, mentioned in Acts 13 and in verse 1. There was a church at Corinth, 1 Corinthians 1 and in verse 2. There was a church at Cenchrea, Romans 16 and in verse 1. The church at Philippi, which had bishops and deacons, Philippians 1 and verse 1. And then we read about the seven churches of Asia, mentioned in Revelation chapters 2 and 3. There's a church at Ephesus and at Smyrna and Pergamos and Thyatira and Sardis and Philadelphia and Laodicea. There are some of those churches. There was a church at Thessalonica, to which 1 and 2 Thessalonians was addressed. There was a church on the island of Crete. Titus was left there to appoint elders in church on the island of Crete. There was a church at Iconium, at Lystra and Derbe. The Bible talks about it, and that's just a sampling of a number of local churches. So there are a number of local churches that we read about in the pages of the New Testament. But in the New Testament times, Christians joined themselves to local churches. Let's notice this in Acts, the second chapter. On the day of Pentecost, when the gospel was preached and people became obedient, you'll recall that the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved. And I think that's in the sense of being added to the church in a universal sense. But I want you to focus on the fact that they seem to band together and a local group and function together as a local church, beginning at verse 42, that they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, fellowship, and breaking of bread, and in prayers. Those were acts of worship they engaged in. Verse 44, all who believed were together and had all things common, suggesting they worked together and they functioned together, fellowship together. They sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all, as anyone had need. And so continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking of bread from house to house, they ate their bread with gladness and singleness of heart and praising God and having favor with all the people. There's a study within itself of what all takes place in verses 42 to 47, but here was a local group banding together, functioning together, and becoming a part of a local group there at Jerusalem. Well, perhaps even clearer is in Acts the 9th chapter. We're going to give a passing reference to this. And then we're going to come back and notice the details a little bit later. But beginning at verse 26, here was Saul, who had been converted. And Saul of Tarsus had been converted to the Lord. And he sought, the verse 26 says, to join himself to the disciples. That is, he was going to identify and become a part of that local church. But they didn't accept him at first. And we'll come back and talk about why that was the case a little bit later. But he did, eventually. Let's go to the 11th chapter of the book of Acts. And I want you to notice, in verse 26, 25 and 26, that Barnabas departed for Tarsus to seek for Saul. This is at the church at Antioch. And when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch, and it was for a whole year they assembled with church. And it taught a great many people, and the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. And so Barnabas and Saul both identified with the church at Antioch and were a part of that work and involved in the local work. That's what I want you to see. Well, there was Phoebe, who was a part of the church. She was a servant of the church at Cenchrea. And that is, she was an active part of that church, and she had identified and joined herself with that church, is what I want you to see. Now, there are some Christians who act as if the local church is not important. They may not word it that way, though there are some Christians who do that, who tell us the local church is not important. All that matters is you have a right relationship with the Lord in a universal sense. And how do they act so as to suggest that? Well, they feel no obligation with reference to a local work. There are Christians who think they could never be, don't have to be a member. They may never be a member of a local church. They may obey the gospel and become a Christian, but they never identify with a local group. And quite often they wander from one church to another. They visit for a little while at this congregation. They may go over to another one and stay there 3 or 4 months. And they may go to another one and worship for a little while, and they never become a part of any local church. And there's perhaps reasons for that we'll come back to a little bit later. There are two questions that are posed before us because of the things that we have looked at thus far. Well, the first question is there such a thing as local church membership? And secondly, if there is such, then what is my responsibility as a member of a local church? Do I have responsibility as a member of a local church? Are there certain obligations that I have because I'm a member and a part and I've identified with this local church? What are my responsibilities? So let's talk about the local church and my responsibility. The first thing I want to talk about is membership within a local church. Let's establish the fact that membership is necessary. The Bible talks about membership within a local congregation, and that becomes necessary. And why is that the case? Well, without it, you have no local church. So let's suppose that people obey the gospel and no one identifies with a local group. If you don't have local church membership, then you don't have a local church as such. And if one person doesn't need to identify as a member of a local church, then no one needs to. Stop and think about that for a moment. That if I don't need to be a member of a local church anywhere, then you don't need to be a member of a local church anywhere. And if you don't need to be, then neither does anyone else. And we have no local church membership. A couple of principles come to play here. For elders to have oversight, there must be local church membership. You say, how so? Well, look at Acts 20 and verse 28. Paul talked to the elders of the church at Ephesus. They were elders of that local church. They were not elders of any other church. They had no oversight beyond that, according to 1 Peter 5, verses 1 to 4. But here the church, the elders have the oversight of the local of the church of God, which was among them. And so here is someone who is a member of a church, for example, over, that was at Ephesus, at Corinth. The elders at Ephesus have no oversight of the members at Corinth, or at Thessalonica, or down at Laodicea, or over at Pergamos. They only had the oversight of the local church, which was at Ephesus. So for elders to be able to have the oversight, there has to be a local church. And therefore, that argues for local church membership. There's another passage that may come to play that we might not think of as directly addressing local church membership, but to carry out church discipline. Here the church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians 5, I'm just going to make a passing reference, and we'll come back to this principle a little bit later. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the church at Corinth was addressed, saying that there was one among you that was committing fornication, that he was living with his father's wife. He's committing fornication with a woman that was not his lawful wife, the text says. They were to put him away from among them. Now, the church cannot exercise church discipline unless one is a part of that local church, as per 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. So those principles argue for the necessity of local church membership. But let's go further. Let's notice some examples of that. Let's start with Acts chapter 9, verses 26 to 28. I said we'd come back to that, and we're going to come back to it even again a little bit later. In Acts chapter 9, beginning at verse 26 through 28, Saul, now that he's obeyed the gospel, not everyone understands that that's taken place, as we'll see in just a moment. But he sought to join himself to the disciples. Now he's already a Christian. He's already identified with the church in a universal sense, but he's seeking to identify himself with the church at Jerusalem, the text says. And he did, according to verse 28. And at the end of verse 28, we'll see that he was very active in that work. Now we're coming back to that a little more closely in a moment. I'm just listing some examples. Let's turn to Acts, the 18th chapter, in verse 27. Here's the case of Apollos. The text says in Acts 18 and in verse 27 that he desired to cross over into Achaia, and the brethren wrote exhorting the disciples to receive him. Now, he's already a Christian. But they're trying to get brethren in another area to accept him and receive him so that he identifies with a local church in that area. And when he arrived, they greatly helped him. Greatly helped those who had believed through grace. So here is Apollos. Here's Paul identified with the church at Jerusalem. Here is Apollos identifying with those in Achaia. We make a passing reference to Phoebe. We've already talked about Phoebe had identified with the church at Cenchreae. She was some kind of special servant. I don't think that meant she served as a deaconess, but she served in a role that she served the church perhaps in ways that others did not, which suggests she was an active, very active member of the church at Cenchreae. So those are some examples. I want to talk about this principle for a little bit as we talk about local church membership. Let's talk about accepting and rejecting members. And the thing I want you to see is that churches not only have a right they have a duty and responsibility with reference to accepting and at the same time rejecting members. What do I mean by rejecting members? That is, that they consider someone, maybe who had been a member, that no longer will you be a member of this local church. Or maybe not accepting someone who wants to identify, like in Acts the 9th chapter, we'll see that in just a moment. Not accepting them into local church fellowship. Let's give you an example of that. Let's look at Acts the 9th chapter, if you will. As you're turning to Acts the 9th chapter, I said we'd come back to that for a closer study in Acts 9. I want to suggest to you, it's in 3 John, that accepting and rejecting members is not to be something arbitrary, as in the case of Diotrephes in 3 John. I'm not going to take the time to turn there, but in 3 John, Diotrephes just arbitrarily decided, here's some that I don't want to accept, and I'm going to reject them, and so he pushes them out of the church, so to speak. We would have no fellowship and no accepting of them. That's an arbitrary thing. Not based upon the revelation of God, not based upon how they're living, not based upon their conforming to the word, but just an arbitrary rejection. That's not the kind of thing that we're talking about. It must be based upon their walking in harmony with the will of God or not walking in harmony with the will of God. 2 passages before we go to Acts 9 come to mind. You're familiar with these, so you don't necessarily need to turn there, but you can if you wish. We're coming back to them a little bit later. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the church at Corinth rejected one who was walking in fornication because they were not walking in harmony with the will of God. That was the basis on which they rejected him. And they were to withdraw from him and put him away from among them, no longer having fellowship with him. The same principle is seen in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, where the church at Thessalonica had some who were walking disorderly in the sense that they had become lazy and they were no longer working because of misunderstanding concerning the second coming. And so they were told to withdraw and put them away from. But it was based upon, here's the principle, upon whether they're walking in harmony with the word. Not an arbitrary, I don't like you, I'm not going to accept you. But it's based upon whether they're walking in harmony with the will of God. Now I want us to look at Acts the 9th chapter, verse 26 to 28, and give a little closer examination of that text. If you don't get any other text with reference to membership, understand Acts 9, 26 to 28. This is where Saul of Tarsus has already obeyed the gospel. He's already a New Testament Christian. And he came to Jerusalem, verse 26 said, and he tried to join the disciples. What does it mean, tried to join the disciples? Well, he was going to join, not in the sense that denominations talk about, I want to join the church. You are added to the Lord's church, but he sought to join himself with the disciples which were at Jerusalem. He's already a Christian. But he's going to identify with the church at Jerusalem, or as we may call it, placing membership in the church at Jerusalem. Or as the New American Standard Bible so translates that, he was going to associate, a special kind of association with the church at Jerusalem. He wants to be a part of that church at Jerusalem. I want you to notice further at verse 28. But they were all afraid of him and did not believe that he was a disciple. What does that tell you? They wouldn't accept just anyone. And they had the right to not accept just anyone. In other words, just because Paul comes along and says, you know what? I'm a faithful Christian. I'm ready to pledge membership and be a part or identify or associate with this church. Then the brethren just say, well, open arms, we're just going to accept you based on the fact that you say you're a faithful, we're going to accept you. They had every right not to accept someone just on the basis that they made the claim they were faithful Christians. So I've learned 2 things from this text so far. I've learned the principle of identifying or joining or placing membership within a local church. Secondly, I see the principle they would not accept just anyone. Now let's look at verse 27. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles, and he declared to them how he had seen the Lord on the road, and how he had spoken to him, and how he preached boldly in Damascus in the name of Jesus. What do you see at verse 27? That they gathered information from the person, that is Saul, and from others, as in this case Barnabas. The church at Jerusalem, before they would accept him into fellowship and say, you're going to be a part of this local church, They said, we want to know more information. So they gathered information from Saul. But they also gathered some information from Barnabas on behalf of him. Churches have a right and responsibility. If you're not a member of this local church, don't be surprised that when you talk to the elders and you say, I want to be a part of this local church, I want to place membership, that they don't ask you some questions. And they may even ask someone else questions about you. You say, well, what basis do they have to do that? Look at Acts 9. That's what we do. I'm serving as one of the elders, and when someone wants to place membership, we often sit down and we talk with them. In fact, we do every time. But not only that, it may be that we may talk to the brethren from which they have come, or ask somebody else who knows something about them, who can vouch for them, about their standing within a local church. But that's not all. I want you to notice verse 28. So it was, so he was with them at Jerusalem, coming in and going out. Well, what does that suggest to you? That he was accepted and he was active. The coming in and going out suggests he was active in the local church. So what did you learn from this text? I learned that here was a disciple who wanted to identify with the local church. The church wouldn't just accept just anyone. They gathered the correct information so they could make their decision. They then accepted him, and then he was very active within the local church. So I've learned two things thus far. In fact, more than that, but here's two things I want you to see. The church there didn't just accept anyone, and the church has the right and the responsibility to ask and to know. In fact, brethren ought to be kind of unimpressed if you go to place membership within a local church and the brethren don't ask you any questions. They don't ask any questions at all. You can rest assured they didn't ask questions of anybody else either. And there's going to be some problems with that. In fact, I'm impressed when brethren start asking questions. In fact, we've had brethren come and place membership with us and they say, we would not have been a part of this church had you not asked us some questions. Because we want you to ask questions, like as per Acts 9. Now, let's talk about some responsibilities in the time we have left. What are my responsibilities as I identify with a local church? Well, let's list these and we'll move through these rather quickly because we have a list of about seven things I want to talk about. First of all, I owe a local church and the Lord, especially, my faithful attendance. Christians assemble together regularly within local churches. We're not going to notice every one of these passages. In Acts 11, verse 26, one of the passages you have there. The disciples, that's where the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. Well, I want you to back up just for a moment to Acts 11. I mean, just previous statement to that in Acts 11. That this is where Barnabas went for Saul and brought him back to the church at Antioch. He'd been a part of the church at Jerusalem. Now he's over at Antioch and he's identified there. And then it was for a whole year they assembled with the church. If he's going to be a part of this local church, he has a responsibility of assembling with that church, and that they did. Acts 20 and verse 7, the disciples came together upon the first day of the week. 1 Corinthians has a number of references to the church assembling together, like in chapter 5, in the church discipline, when you come together, they were to withdraw from the brother. They came together, 1 Corinthians 11, to eat the Lord's Supper. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, when you come together in one place. The church has a responsibility to assemble together. We are to assemble. We're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, Hebrews 10 and verse 25. Now I want to suggest to you what faithful attendance is not. Faithful attendance is not attending Sunday morning only. It does not involve attending more than I'm absent. That's not necessarily faithful attendance. If I'm present more than I'm absent, doesn't necessarily mean I'm faithful in my attendance. And it is not simply attending when there is no other conflict. Every church has some members like that. Perhaps you have some here in Galena. We do where I preach. Who are not really faithful in their attendance. They are Sunday morning only folks, or maybe they attend more than they're absent. In fact, we've got some who are absent more than they attend. And they'll attend only when there's not an inconvenience, and as long as it's convenient, they'll attend. But you, O local church, if you're going to be a part and identify as a member, is your faithful attendance, and to be here every service you can, because the local church depends upon it. Here's a second thing. What do I owe a local church as I become a member? My financial support, secondly. The church has financial obligations to me. If the church is involved in the work of evangelism, it takes money. If for local evangelism, to support preachers in other places. I noticed on the screen you're supporting some others in other places. That takes money to do that. To provide a building for edification, for Bible class material, to print material as was handed out this morning. Those obligations are met by free will offerings of the members. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Let's turn there for a moment. You are familiar. This is, I'm sure, read quite frequently sometimes at the table as we're preparing to give on the first day of the week. This is the only passage that tells us how funds and the day on which those funds were to be raised. How does a church raise its fund? Not by sales and not by some kind of business arrangement, but by free will offering of the member. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, so you must also do. Upon the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, and that there be no collections when I come. That's how a church gains its funds. So local churches have obligations, financial obligations to meet. The only way that's met is through the free will offerings of the saints. Now quickly, I want to list some of the divine principles that regulate such. The Bible commands that we give. We just saw that 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, and 2 Corinthians 9, 6 and 7. So I have an obligation. We're to give weekly upon the first day of every week, 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 2. We're to give as we have been prospered, 1 Corinthians 16 and in verse 2. We're to give bountifully, 2 Corinthians 9 and in verse 6, as we've purposed and planned in our heart, not just a secondary thought that as the plate's being passed, let me see what I've got, but it's a planned thing. And we're to give sacrificially. Remember David made the statement, 2 Samuel 24 and verse 24, that he did not want to offer to the Lord anything that cost him nothing. He wanted to give sacrificially to the Lord, his offering and his service. He said, I want it to be sacrificial. Remember the widow that gave her two mites? She gave all she had. We need to give sacrificially. By the way, 2 Corinthians 8, those who gave in 2 Corinthians 8 gave out of their poverty. It was sacrificially. But furthermore, we're to give cheerfully and from a cheerful heart. So what do I owe a local church? I owe my financial support. I owe my faithful attendance. And thirdly, I owe my good influence. We're saints. We are members now of the local church, if we've identified with the local church. But we're called to be saints. 1 Corinthians 1 and in verse 2. Ephesians 5 and verse 3. And 1 Peter 2 and in verse 9. Several passages talk about us being saints. Not perfection, but it has to do with those who are set apart. Now, if we're saints, that means that we're setting forth a good example. Let's look at some example passages. Turn to Matthew chapter 5. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is saying this, that if you're going to be in my kingdom, which is what his sermon is about, by the way, Matthew chapter 4, verse 23, he's preaching the gospel of the kingdom. So in the Sermon on the Mount, he's preaching about the kingdom. And he starts off in the Sermon on the Mount about the citizens, the characteristics of the citizens of the kingdom. And his second point, as he gets into the citizens of the kingdom, here's their influence on the world. You're a citizen of the kingdom. What about your influence? Well, look at verse 13. You're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You're the light of the world, he said. A city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. Nor do you light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all those who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. What obligation do I have within a local church? Well, not only within a local church, but just as a Christian, I have an obligation to set forth a good example before others, to be a light, as this passage says, and be the salt of the earth. Well, let's turn to another passage along that same line. In Philippians 2 and in verse 15, Paul addressed the church at Philippi, and by divine instruction, he tells them that they should become blameless and harmless and children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. We have an obligation to have good influence upon other people. You can be a shining example within this local church. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 3 and in verse 2, you are our epistle that's known and read of all men. You're writing a book. And you are an epistle that people are reading and they understand from you and from your example what Christianity is all about. And you set an example for this local church. You identify with this local church and you tell people that you go to school with and that you work with and your neighbors, and you invite them to come to the Galena Church of Christ. And I'm a member over there, and your example says everything about what this church is. It tells people this is the kind of people we have over there, and if you're a good godly example, you're setting a good example before the community. If you're not a good example, you're shedding a bad light and giving a bad image of the church in Galena. And so what do you owe a local church? You're good and godly influence. Well, let's look at another principle. What do I owe a local church as I become a member? What do I have? What responsibilities do I have? My involvement in its work. I need to be involved in the work. The Lord has always had work for his people to do. God has never intended for us to become his people and then have nothing to do. Look at Matthew 20 and verse 1. The kingdom of heaven is compared at verse 1 of Matthew chapter 20 as to a vineyard. And being workers in the vineyard. Here's the point. As a vineyard of the Lord, the church is a workplace. And when you say to the elders, you know what, I'd like to identify and be members. I'd like to place membership and be a part of this church. You're not asking, at least you should not be, asking, I want a pew to sit in and I want my picture and my name put in the church directory. And that's all I'm interested in. But you're asking, I want to be a worker in the vineyard here, and so put us to work. Whatever needs to be done, I want to be a part of that. Tell us what we need to do. That's what membership involves. Look at Ephesians chapter 4. This was a local church. Addressing the needs of a local church. In Ephesians chapter 4 and in verse 16. He said, from which the whole body, joined and knit together, by which every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share. Are you doing your share? Is every part of this local church doing its role and its share? So that you got involved in the work of the vineyard? Or are you like those in Nehemiah chapter 3 that will not put their shoulder to the work? We ought to be abounding in the work of the Lord. So what work is the church involved in here? Whatever it's involved in, you need to be a part of that. You owe the local church your obligation to work harmoniously. That's the point of 1 Corinthians chapter 12. By the way, that was a local church circumstance where there was division and friction in the church at Corinth over the matter of spiritual gifts. And the whole point of 1 Corinthians 12 is that the local church, that local body, is like a human body where every part functions together harmoniously. The hand doesn't war against the ear, and the ear doesn't war against the eye, and the foot doesn't war against the head, but works together harmoniously. And so likewise, each member needs to work together harmoniously, not fighting one another, not bickering with one another, not creating friction, working together harmoniously. What do I owe the local church? I owe the local church my involvement in the work. Fifth, my participation in worship. John 4 and verse 24, those that worship God must worship him in spirit and in truth. I have an obligation before God to worship him in spirit, from the heart, sincerely, and in harmony with his will. Worship is not a spectator sport. By that I simply mean it's not something you come and you sit and you observe what goes on. And as brethren are singing and praising God and praying and observing the Lord's Supper, it's not something I sit back and I just observe. But it's something I need to be involved in. Every member is to be a participant, active and not passive. Let me give you an example of that. This is just a sampling. In Ephesians 5 and in verse 19, this is a command given to each one of us, speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. And the reason I mention singing particularly is that quite often, those song leaders can testify to this, those men who lead the singing, and every preacher can testify to this as they stand before a crowd during an invitation song, that quite often in a crowd you'll have a small percentage, but you'll still have a percentage of Christians who have identified in a local church and they never open their mouth and they never participate in singing at all. Well, they've been baptized, they're Christians, but they, for whatever reason, they don't worship. What do I owe a local church? What do I owe with reference to my being a member and an active part? And what do I owe to the service of the Lord? That I need to be a participant in worship. Ephesians 5 and verse 19 is a command to each one of us, speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. One brother said a number of years ago, I think we are stronger in our opposition to instrumental music than we are in our stand for singing. It's a pretty good point. In other words, if we brought a piano in we'd start having a fit because that doesn't fit Ephesians 5:19. And here's where I stand. I stand on this scripture. But when the songs were sung, I don't fulfill the scripture. So we are stronger in our opposition to error than we are in our stand for truth sometimes. What obligation do I have to be a participant in local worship? Number 6. What obligations do I have with reference to a local church and being a member? My care and my concern. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 12. Again, I suggest to you in the context of their division and their friction over spiritual gifts, but they were fracturing and the church was quite divided over that. And Paul addresses that problem. You're showing a lack of love and concern. And that's the whole point of 1 Corinthians 13. He's not up to say, oh, by the way, let's talk about love. The thing they were lacking was love and concern. This was a more excellent way, as he said in verse 31. But look at verse 25. Verse 25, he said that there should be no schism or division, tear, rip in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. There ought to be care and concern that the members have for one another. Too often, we become indifferent and apathetic toward one another and toward the church as a whole. Now, I know Lamentations is not talking about the local church, but it is talking about the people of God going into Babylonian captivity, and Jeremiah raised the question, is it nothing to all you who pass by? You're headed toward doom and destruction, and you act like it's nothing. Sometimes we see needs of a member, or maybe they're hurting, or maybe we see that they have problems, and we pass by as if we don't care. And I give you an example of Luke chapter 10. If you don't recognize the reference, that's the where the priest and the Levite passed by the man and was not like the Good Samaritan, but they passed by on the other side because they didn't care. And too often we're apathetic and we are indifferent. We need to be concerned and show we care for one another. What obligations do I have in the local church? I'm identified as part of this family, is to show love and care and concern for one another. One last thing in the lesson is yours. I have an obligation to help restore the erring. Look at Galatians 6 and in verse 1. If I'm a part of this local church and I've identified as a member of this local congregation, I must consider myself to be spiritual. And here's what Galatians 6 and verse 1 says. To you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. If one's overtaken in a fault, if some brother or sister goes astray, those who are consider themselves to be spiritual have an obligation to try to restore them. You say, well, that's why we have elders. Well, that's right. The elders have every responsibility to go to them and talk to them. That's why we have a preacher. He has a responsibility too. But Galatians 6:1 wasn't addressed to elders or to preachers. It was addressed to Christians. And that's you. But you go and you try to restore them in the spirit of meekness. And how sad it is that I just talked to someone just recently who had gone astray and came back to the Lord. And when they came back, they said, do you know there's not one single person, not one single person. This wasn't where I preached, by the way. But not one single member of the church where I was a member. Not even the elders came to me and tried to restore me. Not one single one. Isn't that sad? You have an obligation according to Galatians 6 and verse 1. I said we'd come back to these last two passages, and these are the last two in the lesson is yours. I have an obligation to support disciplinary action. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and we'll conclude with that one in the same principle in 2 Thessalonians 3, so we won't turn there. 1 Corinthians 5. The church at Corinth had a problem that had not been addressed. And we'll talk about that this afternoon at 3 o'clock. But nonetheless, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, they were told to withdraw from this brother. And that when they came together in the assembly, they were to take care of the business of withdrawing from him. And we learn a little bit later in 2 Corinthians 2, that's what they did. But I want to begin at verse 9. You say, what does it mean to support that action? He said, I wrote to you in my epistle, not to keep company with sexually immoral people. And I certainly do not mean with sexually immoral people of this world, or with the covetous or extortioners, idolaters, etc. But I've written to you, verse 11, that if anyone be named a brother who is a fornicator, or covetous, or an idolater, or a reviler, or a drunkard, not even to eat with such a person. Go back to verse 9. This word company means to mix up together with. It's to socialize. We'll talk more about this later in the week, but the principle involved is that when someone has been disciplined and the elders have led in the action, it's not merely the elders are withdrawing from this person, but they're leading us as a congregation that we are withdrawing from the disorderly, and the mission and the mode of that is, the purpose of that is, we're trying to bring them back to the Lord, according to verse 5 and 6. We're trying to maintain the purity of the church, verse 6. But verse 5, we're trying to deliver him unto Satan that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus. This is the Lord's means and methods of trying to save him. Now part of carrying that out is, I'm not to company with them. That means to mix up together with. Look at that word company up. To socialize. And quite often what we do in withdrawing from someone, we may say, yeah, they're in sin, but I want to try to reach them, so I'm going to socialize with them. I'm going to invite them into my home. I'm going to have dinner with them. I'm going to go to parties with them. I'm going to go shopping with them. I'm going to go golfing and fishing with them. I'll go bowling with them. I'll do whatever it takes, and I'll socialize with them, trying to win them, when the text says, have no company with them. And if you're part of this local church and the elders are correct in withdrawing from someone, I have every obligation to support that disciplinary action, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. What obligations do I have? Well, I have an obligation for my faithful attendance, my financial support, setting a good example before others, being involved in the work, my participation in worship, my care and concern in helping to restore the area. When you approach the elders and you say, I want to be a member of this local church. I'd like to identify, I'm like Saul, who was converted. I want to join the church here at Galena. I want to be a part of this church. What you're saying is, I want to be faithful in my attendance. I'll be here every service. You're saying, I'll give my financial support as best I can. I'm going to set a good example before others. I want to be involved. Give me some work to do. I'm going to participate in worship. I'll show my care and concern for all the members. And I'm going to help restore the area the best I can. And I'll support disciplinary action. I want to be a part of all of that work. Local church membership and my responsibility. You see, Jesus loved the church that he gave himself for it. And Jesus shed his blood, as we observed this morning during the Lord's Supper. He shed his blood to purchase the church. I should feel some sense of obligation, shouldn't I? With reference to the responsibility of a local church. If a local church is of such value that Jesus loved it and that he was willing to die that there might be a local church, as well as a church in the universal sense. If Jesus died that there might be a local church, should I not feel some sense of obligation toward the local church? There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Did you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?